Hello, and welcome to 15 Minutes with Charlie. I'm your host, Charlie Meacham. I want to help you communicate more effectively, and I believe that the use of anecdotes can get you there. Explore this with me as I share anecdotes from my book, Total Anecdotal, and ask guests to react in relation to their own experience and careers. In today's episode, I'm talking with Steve Mosco, an old and dear friend of mine. Steve was chairman of Sony Pictures Television for a number of years and enjoyed great success. He recently left Sony to become CEO of Village Roadshow Entertainment Group. Steve is one of the most respected and successful executives in the entertainment business. That said, welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, Charlie, how are you?
I'm very well, and thanks so much for doing this. The way I like to do this is just to quote a few anecdotes from the book and then just get your reaction to the anecdotes as it may have related to your own career.
Sure.
The first one is on page 26 of my book under the category of adaptability and flexibility. And it's designed to sort of emphasize how important being flexible and adaptable can be. And here's the anecdote. I was privileged to serve for more than 25 years on the board of the J.M. Smucker Company. Paul Smucker was CEO and driving force through the years, an extraordinary man in many ways. One year, during the question and answer period at the annual meeting, a woman got up, noted that she and Paul had known one another since they were in grade school together, and that she'd always loved the company and everything it stood for. But she said, "There's one little thing, Paul. All of your jams and jellies are put up in such large jars. We older folks, especially those of us living alone, don't need such big containers. Couldn't you put your jams and jellies in itty-bitty jars?" Well, the audience laughed and applauded, and I thought, wow, how's Paul going to handle this one? It was a good question. It was being asked by a lovely lady and an old school friend. Well, Paul smiled and said, "Mabel, you're right. We've known one another for many years, and I respect your judgment. It's a very good question that you've asked me. Let me try to answer this way. We could indeed and maybe should put up our jams and jellies in itty-bitty jars. But Mabel, if we did that, then we'd have to pay itty-bitty dividends." And the crowd roared, Mabel smiled, and the meeting went on. So, Steve, your thoughts about adaptability and flexibility.
Sure. Well, first of all, I read the book, Charlie, and saw this. I talk about people getting along. I mean, you and Arnold Palmer work together. I refer to those relationships as peanut butter and jelly relationships.
Right.
Because they go so well together. And you had a peanut butter and jelly relationship with Arnold, and I think I have with some of my people. But in terms of how that relates to my business today, in terms of the entertainment business, the world has changed from a linear world to an on-demand world. And if people in our business weren't flexible enough and willing to change enough to adapt to this new world, they would be getting itty-bitty profits as well.
Right.
Because
right.
The world has transitioned. And not this is not to say that the CBSs of the world or NBCs and the linear networks are going away, but certainly there's a place and there's demand for these streaming services like Netflix, like Amazon, like Hulu, and people in the industry who've adapted to their business model have done very, very well. So There couldn't be a more pertinent reference you could make than that one. And that's, when I read the book, like I said, that's the first thing I thought about.
Good. Thank you. The next anecdote I wanted to highlight is on page 44 under the category of courage and risk taking. And I just made up a few hypotheticals of what might have happened if some of people involved in the greatest moments in history had not had the courage to go on or had been risk averse. And here are just a couple of them. Suppose Neil Armstrong had said to Buzz Aldrin, "You know, Buzz, we're running a little low on gas. Maybe we'd better let somebody else be the first man on the moon." Another one, what if Wilbur Wright had said to Orville, "It's awful windy here, and I'm not sure this crazy thing will fly anyway. Let's just forget it. We'll think of something simpler to invent, something that stays on the ground." I'd like your thoughts on being risk-averse without being reckless.
So my favorite story here, I guess, is that, a couple years back, there was this television show that we were developing. And if I gave you the one-liner, you'd probably look at me and say, that's a terrible idea. But the idea was about a guy who develops terminal cancer, who decides to sell crystal meth to support his family long after he's gone. That was the idea, original idea, and is the idea for Breaking Bad, which today is recognized as one of the greatest shows ever produced in the history of television. And at the time, we were, you know, there's a process which we go through, we get shows approved, where I had to go to my boss and say, okay, here's our idea, here's what it's going to cost, here's how much money I think we will make. And we joke about it to this day, but he said to me, when I presented the idea, that's the worst idea I've ever heard for a television show. And the long and the short of it is that everyone involved, Bryan Cranston, went on to great things. Vince Gilligan, who created and wrote the show, will go down as one of the great writers of this generation. But that it was a huge risk. And when you're looking across the table, your boss says that's the worst idea I ever heard.
Yeah.
It makes you think twice, but myself and the team that I was associated, my team that helped develop it, we were like, no, we believe in this idea. And it not only went on to be one of the most recognized dramas in the history of television, but also one of the most profitable pieces of original IP in the history of Sony. So when I say it took a lot of courage, it was a group of us that had, had the courage to stand up and say, we think this could be great. And again, I think if you believe in something and you're passionate about something, and you've done your homework and you really, you just need to go for it. So anyway, that is my best and only example. I don't have one that's better than that.
No, that's a good one.
My example. That's a good one.
I don't know if I've ever told you this story, and by the way, for those listening, in the interest of full disclosure, many years ago, Steve worked for my company, Taft Broadcasting Company, and we were too dull and stuffy, so he went on to more exciting things. But Steve was a terrific part of our company, and I don't know that I ever shared this with you, Steve. One day I got a call from Barry Diller, one of the legends in the industry then and now, said he had a project he wanted to talk to me about. So he came to our office in Cincinnati and proposed that we be one of the original five investors in a show that he was hoping he could make work called Entertainment Tonight. And we were one of, I think, five investors. Didn't put up a lot of money because Barry said, hey, we'll do a few shows. We'll run them. If they work, fine. We'll make more. If they don't, we'll forget it. And, you know, God knows, as you know very well, Entertainment Tonight is still on the air. So that's another example of risk-taking. The next one is under the category of forecasting the future. And this is one of my favorites. Several years ago, I was attending a conference in Cleveland, Ohio, during which we heard a speech from the much-acclaimed business leader and visionary, Dr. Simon Ramo. One of my good friends, Don Hinckley of Cincinnati, was also in the audience. It's important before going on to note the speech was given in September. Dr. Ramo gave a superb, thought-provoking talk and shared his vision for coming decades and even longer. When he finished, he asked for questions, and my friend Don raised his hand and said, Dr. Ramo, I've truly enjoyed your vision of the future, but let me ask you this. How do you see October? It
right.
brought the house down, but your thoughts on short-term and long-term?
Well, I'll tell you, I go back to my college days on this, Charlie, when I was captain of the Delaware lacrosse team. And, you know, we were working really hard in the preseason, and you know, our goal was to go undefeated. And, you know, so that was every day we're running our miles, we're doing our sprints, we're doing our, you know, all these things prepare for the season. We're going to go undefeated. We play our first game, we lose.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, wait a minute, everything we were doing was built for us being undefeated. Now we've lost a game. Now what?
Right.
So That was a very good lesson in my life from a business standpoint, because what I realize is it's great to have a long-term goal, but you need to, you know, in order to be successful in business, you have to put one foot, in order to win a race, you have to put one foot in front of the other.
So,
at that point, I realized in life that, you know, you can have long-term goals, but then you have to have your short-term goals along the way in order to achieve those long-term goals. So a more realistic goal could have been winning the conference championship, which we did.
Could have been
executing a certain plan every game, or just getting 100% every game, whatever it was, which allowed us to, which had a long-term view, but really focused on, in order to achieve that long-term goal, hitting short-term goals along the way.
Amen.
And that was a huge, huge moment in my life, because it really carried over into business.
Boy, it sure does. Thanks for that one. Next anecdote's on page 88. It's under the heading of passion, and it's a quote from P.T. Barnum, who said, "It is critically important for success to make every goal a stretch goal. If you get there, fabulous. If you don't get there, you're still going to get a lot farther than you would have had you not set that lofty goal in the first place." Barnum put it this way, "If I shoot at the sun, I may hit a star." Your thoughts on that?
Right. Well, that's accurate. I mean, I just think, we got to be realistic about, our goals in life and what we're trying to achieve. And I guess my whole thing is I have big, lofty goals and I'm shooting for the stars, or the sun. But along the way, I want to enjoy myself and be surprised what might pop up along the way if I'm on the right road.
Right.
And, so, again, you can always have that view of what's coming up down the road. But, as you're driving, you look out the window and see what's coming at you, because you might be surprised and might be happy.
Absolutely. The next anecdote is on page 104 of the book under the heading of self-reliance. In other words, the importance of not just having team members and support, but you've got to be able to rely in the final analysis on your own ability and your own willingness to do the things we've talked about, take risks and so on. And here's the anecdote. A man was traveling through the wilds of Vermont and he felt totally lost. Happily, he saw a road sign with two arrows. One pointing east read Rutland, 7 miles. Unfortunately, the other sign pointing west had exactly the same thing, Rutland, 7 miles. Now, the guy was totally confused. Here were two signs pointing in exactly opposite directions, yet saying the same thing. The man drove up, stopped, got out, and asked the farmer, "Does it matter which road I take to Rutland?" The farmer thought for a moment, and then in that classic Vermont twang, he said, "Not to me, it don't." So, your thoughts on that?
So this is about self-reliance, right, Charlie?
Yes.
So I think when I read some of the things you were talking about with self-reliance, I don't know what, and I hopefully this ties in, but because I always think about like what motivates people to kind of really reach, and have some self-reliance. But I used to be a greenskeeper, or not greenskeeper. I was a head of the greens committee for my golf course years ago, and this is somewhat counterintuitive, but in terms of, we're talking about how you water the grass.
Yep.
And you would think the more water you put down, right?
Yep.
That the grass would be greener and stronger. It's actually the opposite.
Right.
That, that you actually want to, I don't want to say starve the grass a little bit, but you want to make, what you want to do is make the roots fight for the water, because it actually, in the end, makes the roots stronger if they have to reach up and or reach down and grab the water. So by watering the grass a little bit less than you would think,
mm-hmm.
you actually make the grass better and stronger.
Great point.
When I think about business, I look sometimes at companies that overspend on things, like overspend on movies or overspend. And what ultimately happens is they get you get lazy when you have too much.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to work hard for it. You're not self-reliant. Whereas if you have if you work with a little bit, you make the most out of it. And I also think back when my grandmother was living with us. We had, you know, seven kids in our family, and my grandmother and my grandfather came to live with me. My grandfather was a coal miner. They, you know, came up through the Depression, the whole thing. And, you know, you had to be self-reliant if you went through the Depression. And mm-hmm. I would watch her so she would cook dinner for all the kids, help my mom out, and she would make baked chicken on Monday. She would then take the leftover chicken and make chicken soup on Tuesday, and then take the leftover bones and such and make chicken paprikash on Wednesday. So she used every possible piece of that chicken because she was used to being taking care of herself, being self-reliant. And anyway, those are two examples about what self-reliance means.
Those are great stories. And by the way, you and I got to talk someday. My grandfather was a coal miner, too.
Oh, I know.
Talk about that? Yeah, my grandmother did much of the same things that you're talking about. Well, one final anecdote, and this one is, I love this one. It's on page 116 of the book under the category of what's really important. And this is a quiz that it's hypothetical, but it makes the point. Here it is. The first quiz goes like this. Name five of the wealthiest people in the world. Name five Heisman Trophy winners. Name five winners of the Miss America contest. Name 10 people who won a Nobel or Pulitzer Prize. Name the last half dozen Academy Award winners, male and female, and name the last 10 winners of the World Series. Well, how'd you do? Probably not very well. Well, let's try another one. And here's the next quiz. Name three teachers who aided your journey through school. Name three friends who have helped you through a difficult time. Name five people who have taught you worthwhile things. Name a few people who have made you feel special. Name five people who you enjoy being with. Name several heroes whose lives have inspired you. I suspect that you've answered every question easily.
Sure.
I'd like your take on that.
Well, first thing I will say to you as the host of this podcast is that you were certainly following one of the people that has made a big influence in my life, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
I went through a situation where I've been in business now for 41 years, and I know what you're thinking, Charlie, I don't look like I've been in business for 41 years, so thank you for thinking that.
No, you don't.
I've had a great career. I was in the broadcasting business, thanks to you and Dudley Taft, and those were great years. I had the great fortune of spending 24 years at Sony. And, you know, after putting those two back to back, I decided it was time to do something which is a little more entrepreneurial. And as I sat back and looked at what my priorities were going to be going forward, I said a couple things to myself. One is, I think the best years are ahead of me. And I'm saying that as a guy who turned 63 in April.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think these next 10 years are going to be phenomenal, thanks to what I've learned and, you know, how I've taken care of myself and all that. But I also made a vow to myself that, you know, to really, when I make this decision, what I want to do next, is really determine what's important. And when I realized it wasn't the perks, it wasn't all the vanity things that come along with these entertainment jobs, it was, you know, working with quality people. It was being with people that were passionate about what they do. It was doing something where I had fun and just not working with people I thought were less than quality people from a morale or moral standpoint or ethics.
Right.
So surround myself with good people, people that were passionate, and people that wanted to enjoy what they do. And fortunately, you know, now as CEO of Village Roadshow, I'm surrounded by people who are exactly that way. And it's very rewarding. And like I said, I will say this, and I'd say it if you weren't the host of this podcast, is that you have always been to me the perfect role model, because for several reasons. One, You are as friendly to the guy who's a security guard as you are to people that were heads of state. And that's a remarkable quality, and you've always had that. Second thing is, you have what seem like, to me, watching from the outside, just so smoothly transitioned from, like, major things in your life, from whether it's, you know, running Taft or partnering with Arnold Palmer or running the LPGA and all the board thing, everything you've done in your life. It's been amazing to me how you've transitioned so easily, at least from my view. It's because you treated people the way you treated them, whatever you did, you know, the right way and the way you would want to be treated. And you demanded excellence, but you also took into consideration the human element, that you're dealing with people. And so, listen, it's an honor to be part of this podcast, and I just want the listeners to know and you to know how much our friendship means, and that you've been a great role model for me. And when I read your book, or your books, you live this life. This isn't something you had to make up. This is who you are. So it's a privilege to be part of it.
You're making me blush, and if we run into any time problems on this on this podcast, we'll certainly use the last part of it. I'm teasing. You, Steve, having people as successful as you come through our orbit, if you will, and be part of our life is really what's important to me. And I've always said people. It's like the old real estate location. Business is not that complicated if you realize it's all about motivating people to do what not just you want to do, but they want to do. So thank you very, very much. Continued success, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Charlie, have a wonderful day. I love you, and many, many, many more years of success and on this earth, and I'm proud to call you my friend.
You're the best. Have a good one, pal.
Thank you for joining me for today's conversation. If you'd like to listen to more episodes, please visit charliemeacham.com or search for 15 Minutes with Charlie in your podcasting app. And if you're enjoying the show, you should check out my book, Total Anecdotal, a fun guide to help you become a better speaker and writer. Learn more at charliemeacham.com/book. That's charliemeacham.com/book. Or you can acquire the book either through Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Thank you.